Good morning. Saturday, April 11th, 2026. You're listening to Morning Signal. I'm Andrew.
And I'm Ava. Andrew, I have to say, I read through the full briefing last night, and I did not sleep well.
That's actually kind of the appropriate response.
I mean it. There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on. And what's unusual about this particular moment, and I want to dig into this, is that all of it is connected. Like the stuff that's happening in the Middle East, the AI build-out, the Fed being stuck, these aren't separate stories right now.
They're feeding each other.
They're feeding each other. Exactly. So let's start with markets and macro, because I think that's the scaffolding you need to understand everything else. Ava, you want to set the scene?
Sure. So the baseline here, and this is coming out of the Forward Guidance Pod this week. Hormuz has been functionally closed for 45 plus days. Oil is sitting at $100 front month. The 10-year treasury is at 4.27%. And core PCE has been running at 40 basis points a month for the last 3 months.
Which annualizes to almost 5%.
Right.
And here's the thing, that forward guidance flag that I keep coming back to. They're saying there are 3 or 4 more scalding prints still ahead of us in this data cycle. So whatever pain we've felt on inflation so far, we may not be done.
And the Fed can't really respond to any of it because, and this is from RINMAC off script this week, they had Rich Clarita on, former Fed vice chair. Kevin Warsh can't get confirmed because Senator Tillis is blocking the vote until the DOJ drops its criminal investigation of Jay Powell.
So you have this policy vacuum right at the exact wrong moment.
The exact wrong moment. And Clarita was actually pretty specific about the timeline. His modal case is that Warsh chairs the June FOMC meeting. But there's this wild wrinkle, and this came out of RINMAC too. The FOMC chair is elected by the committee. So Powell could theoretically stay on as governor and just be in the room, like this shadow Fed chair dynamic.
That would be genuinely bizarre.
Eccles and Truman era precedent, apparently. But bizarre, yes. Now look, on equities. The Compound and Friends this week had Steve Sosinek from Interactive Brokers on, and the framing I thought was really clarifying was this. The S&P is only about 3% off all-time highs. Max drawdown since February 27th is about 9%. And yet forward PE has compressed 18 to 19% over that same period.
So earnings estimates haven't moved.
Haven't moved. JP Morgan's guide to the markets shows consensus 2026 EPS at or near all-time highs. So what you have is a bear market in multiples that's being masked by simultaneously rising earnings estimates. And those two things cannot both be right for long.
And Sosinek had that great line, something like S&P 3% off all-time highs with Hormuz closed 45 days, oil at 100, core PC reaccelerating. You would take that short blindfolded every day of the week.
That's the bear case. The bull case, also from forward guidance, is basically extreme positioning unwind. Goldman's derivatives desk is saying the systematic community is still net short $37 billion of U.S. equities. CTAs are projected to buy $45 billion over the next week in a flat tape. And the contrarian framing is, Trump needs midterm wins, and midterms are 8 months out. So there's a policy put under markets.
So bearish that you're bullish.
So bearish that you're bullish. Which is either very sophisticated or deeply insane.
Probably both. What was the retail data like?
So this was interesting from the Compound and Friends. Citadel data showed the first week of net retail selling since November 2025. And it happened to coincide exactly with the day the Fed expectations flipped from pricing a hike to pricing a December 2026 cut, which tells you retail was watching the Fed, not the geopolitics.
And what were they actually buying on the dip?
This is the most behaviorally interesting part. The most bought instrument at Interactive Brokers during the drawdown was VO, the Vanguard 500 ETF. Not leveraged products. Micron and Nvidia were bought on dips. Tesla bought on sell-offs. Microsoft steadfastly bought despite essentially no bid from the market.
So people are buying the companies they believe in, not trying to trade around the chaos.
Basically. Okay, let me flag one more macro thing before we move to tech. And this is from RINMAC Offscript. Clarita was explicit that AI capex right now is not a counterbalance to inflationary pressure. It's adding to it. His framing was that near term, all this build-out is demand-side stimulus in old economy directions. Construction workers, concrete, power plants, NVIDIA chips. The supply-side productivity benefits from AI are not there yet.
Which is such an important point because I think the narrative in markets has been AI is this deflationary force that the Fed should be leaning into. And Clarita is basically saying no, not yet. Maybe eventually, but right now it's inflationary.
Right now it's inflationary. And that changes the rate math considerably.
Okay, can I pivot to tech? Because the Anthropic story this week is where all of this gets really interesting and also really contested.
Please.
So over on the All-In Pod this week, they spent a huge chunk of time on the Anthropic Mythos model release, released the week of April 9th. Apparently, it's blown up expert benchmarks. But here's the key thing. Anthropic declined to release it publicly.
Which immediately raises the question of why.
Right.
And what they're claiming, again from All-In, is that this model can autonomously identify thousands of OS and browser vulnerabilities, and not just find known ones. They're talking about a 27-year-old OpenBSD vulnerability used in critical infrastructure firewalls, a 16-year-old FFmpeg bug that survived 5 million automated scans, novel exploit chains that combine 3 to 5 independent vulnerabilities.
Wait, how does a bug survive 5 million automated scans?
That's exactly the question. Because automated scans are looking for known patterns. Something genuinely novel doesn't fit the pattern. Which is the claim here that Mythos is actually doing creative security research, not just pattern matching.
And they've assembled, what is it, 40 companies?
So this is Project Glasswing. 40 companies, Apple, Microsoft, Google, Amazon, JP Morgan named, in a 100-day sandboxing period. Find and patch vulnerabilities before public release. Completely voluntary, no government mandate.
Which Saxon All-In acknowledged is more on the legitimate side, his words, even though he also pointed out that Anthropic has a documented pattern of fear-based marketing. He mentioned that blackmail study where they ran 200-plus prompted runs to get the result they wanted.
Chalmath was more skeptical. His read, and this is still from All-In, was basically, remember GPT-2 in 2019? 1.5 billion parameter model, hyped as a civilization-ending risk, turned out to be nothing. He's essentially applying that frame here. And he said something that stuck with me. An advanced hacker can do this today with Opus.
Which is either true or terrifying depending on which part of an advanced hacker you focus on.
Ha, fair.
But the market clearly didn't wait for the debate to resolve. Palantir down 8%, Palo Alto down 5%, CrowdStrike down 8%, ServiceNow down 8, consecutive sessions.
Which is interesting because the forward guidance read on this was actually different from the security angle. Their framing was, this is really a compute supply story disguised as a policy decision. If Mythos is a national security asset, AI compute investment becomes militarily non-discretionary, which creates a pathway for government funding regardless of macro conditions.
The hardware thesis, in other words.
Exactly. And that maps to the semis versus software divergence that the compound and friends has been tracking. SMH within 1% of all-time highs while IGEV is breaking below daily, weekly, and monthly moving averages simultaneously. Dell, HP, NetApp, Supermicro going vertical. Software getting crushed.
And Sosinic pulled out what I thought was the single most arresting data point. On two consecutive days, the S&P rose 3.1% while IGV fell 5.2%. That combination had never occurred in the prior 25-year dataset.
Never. Once.
Which either means we're in genuinely unprecedented territory, or something is very wrong with how either semis or software is being priced.
Both possibly. Okay, what about the OpenAI versus Anthropic competitive picture? Because big technology this week had a lot on this.
So big technology this week. The revenue numbers are remarkable. OpenAI is at roughly $25 billion annualized. Anthropic is at about $19 billion. And the trajectory implies a revenue crossing point within 12 months.
Which would have seemed insane 18 months ago.
Wild. And OpenAI's response to Claude Code's enterprise momentum, again this is big technology, is apparently to kill what they're calling side quests. Sora is on the chopping block. The pivot is to a super app bundling ChatGPT plus Codex plus this Atlas browser they're building, basically trying to own the surface area.
The OpenClaw thing from All-In was also pretty telling. Anthropic terminated $200 a month subscriptions from users who were consuming $2,000 to $20,000 in tokens. Which, fair enough from a unit economic standpoint. But then within 10 days, they announced Claude managed agents on April 8th. And Sachs read that as, they systematically copied feature by feature, incorporated it into Claude, then cut off the oxygen.
And Chalmath took the antitrust framing further. If Anthropic provides first-party agents at flat rate while third parties pay metered, and Anthropic has 50 to 60% of coding token market share, his estimate, that's potentially bundling under antitrust law.
Interesting. Okay, here's the thing that gives me pause on all of these valuations, though. The Bittenzer story from All In.
Oh, this one.
Bittenzer Subnet 62, they're calling it Ridges AI, spent approximately $1 million in TEO token rewards. Hit 80% of Claude 4 capability in 45 days via anonymous distributed contribution, Bitcoin mining style incentives.
$1 million.
$1 million versus what OpenAI reportedly spent getting to their current capability. And if open source can close capability gaps that quickly,
then the terminal value case for an $830 billion private valuation depends entirely on that remaining 20% gap being the part that matters.
And Kamath's point was that the bottleneck isn't frontier capability right now. His number was 5% enterprise AI adoption at the broad market level. One company he mentioned still brings in 60-year-old retirees to interpret COBOL. So the frontier gap may not be what's constraining deployment.
Which makes the IPO math complicated. The Compound and friends flagged that SpaceX, OpenAI, and Anthropic are all potentially targeting similar market windows. And for S&P index inclusion alone, Invesco and peers would have to sell 99 other positions to fund purchases. The supply-demand equation that's been a tailwind for equities for a decade actually reverses.
Forward guidance hosts predicted neither OpenAI nor Anthropic would actually IPO in 2026. And apparently OpenAI's CFO, Sarah Friar, was excluded from investor meetings on server spending, which is a tell.
That's a tell, yes. Okay, let's get to geopolitics because I think we've been circling it and it's really the foundation of everything.
Yeah, let's do it. What's the on-the-ground picture?
So geopolitical cousins this week had the most granular operational breakdown I've seen. Israel has struck Beirut, 250 plus killed, 1,000 plus injured. Drones hit Saudi pipelines. Reports of Abqaiq on fire. U.S. conducting 20% of daily strikes on Iran, Israel 80%. And there is technically a ceasefire in place, but...
But?
Jacob on Geopolitical Cousins described it as apparently in ceasefires you still throw bombs at each other. Iran's parliament speaker has cited 3 violations already. Lebanon is the real flashpoint. Jacob sees it as a genuine Iranian red line, while Marco thinks it's something Iran will ultimately sell for economic reasons.
And the tolling mechanism. This is what I keep coming back to from Geopolitical Cousins, because I think Marco's framing here is the most intellectually interesting and most underpriced thing in markets right now.
Explain the tolling thing for people who haven't heard it.
So the IRGC has apparently set up a formal system for ships to pay to transit. And I mean formal. Reportedly a Delaware LLC, an online portal, $2 million per vessel, accepting Bitcoin, Yuan, and Reals. And Marco's point is that incremental vessel traffic was already ticking up before any ceasefire, because some ships are just paying.
So the binary framing that markets are using, Hormuz open versus Hormuz closed, is wrong.
Maybe exactly wrong. Because if Marco is right, the ceasefire collapsing doesn't necessarily produce the oil spike the market fears. And the ceasefire continuing doesn't necessarily reopen Hormuz fully. The actual variable to track is the tolling mechanism stability, not the ceasefire headline.
And the Compound and Friends Black Swan model, which had oil going to 150 to 200 on a full closure, would be wrong not just in magnitude, but in its entire framing.
Exactly. Now, the Hormuz arithmetic from Geopolitical Cousins is worth knowing. Normal traffic is 800 to 1,000 ships per day. Current actual throughput is 35 to 40, and only about 2 VLCCs, 4 million barrels, need a transit to cover the near-term supply gap. But that number rises to 4 VLCCs minimum by end of April. So the window is tightening.
And the commodity dependencies go way beyond oil. This was in both Geopolitical Cousins and the Compound and Friends. Helium sourced from the Persian Gulf is a critical input for semiconductor fabrication. Fertilizer downstream is affecting food supply for 3 billion people in Pakistan, India, and China. These are not priced.
They're absolutely not priced. And the Iran-China relationship from geopolitical cousins is one of those things that looks simple and isn't. Iran runs a trade deficit with China despite being China's third largest crude supplier. China is Iran's economic lifeline, including drone components. So China has leverage over Iranian behavior. But simultaneously, prolonged Hormuz disruption threatens the LNG going to South Korea and Taiwan that powers the semiconductor fabs feeding China's AI supply chain.
Right.
So China is this inadvertent winner in fixed income. Forward guidance noted that 30-year Chinese bond yields were the only major yields that didn't rise post-Iran war, but also an inadvertent victim through the supply chain.
And they're implicated in the conflict through Iranian drone components. Geopolitical cousins confirmed Iranian drone supply chains contain Chinese, Korean, and reportedly U.S. origin components, which means sanctions enforcement is confirmed porous, and China has secondary sanctions exposure if this escalates.
The forward guidance read was China may be winning. The geopolitical cousins supply chain analysis is more complicated than that.
Substantially more complicated. Okay. Let's close the loop with private credit, because I think it's the risk nobody's really pricing.
Yeah.
Invest Like the Best this week had Alan Waxman from Sixth Street on, and it was one of those conversations where someone really careful says something alarming very quietly.
What was the alarming part?
So the setup is this. Private credit has grown from roughly $500 billion pre-GFC to about $2 trillion today. FRE multiples have gone from 10 to 15 times in the early 2000s to 25 to 30 plus currently. And some of these perpetual private BDCs are seeing redemption requests exceeding the 5% quarterly limit. So you have illiquid assets paired with semi-liquid terms.
And Waxman's line was,
semi-liquid is not a real thing. That was the line. His diagnosis is that the root cause is the factory model of private capital, pushing retail wealth channel money into principal risk-taking next to illiquid assets. Same asset-liability mismatch as the GFC, just in unregulated clothing.
And the compound of friends made explicit what makes this directly connected to tech. Sosinek said a lot of the software boom was financed with private credit. So if software EPS rolls over in Q2 earnings, which IGV's chart suggests is coming, equity and credit holders get hit simultaneously into a private credit market that's already under redemption pressure.
Waxman said, not yet systemic, but that qualifier depends on the economic backdrop remaining decent. And decent is a hard thing to guarantee with oil at 100, 3 to 4 hot inflation prints ahead, and no confirmed Fed chair.
Okay, what are we watching?
Ceasefire durability and the tolling mechanism. Jacob on geopolitical cousins gives Iran a 2 to 4 week leverage window before the international flotilla and alternative pipeline CAPEX start eroding their position. Three violations already cited, Lebanon as a potential escalation trigger. The headline to watch is not ceasefire. It's whether ships are paying and transiting.
Kevin Warsh confirmation. Clarita's modal case from RINMAC is Warsh chairs the June FOMC meeting. Steve Pavel apparently takes the over on May 15th. That sets the clock on when the Fed can credibly respond to any of this.
Software earnings. Q2 is the first data point on whether EPS actually rolls over to confirm what the multiple compression is already suggesting. That's when the private credit link becomes visible or doesn't.
Project Glasswing. A 100-day sandboxing window on Mythos ends around mid-July. That's when we find out if the cybersecurity capability is what Anthropic claims or what Chamath calls fear-based marketing. The Chinese model parity window, Kimi K2 cited as roughly 6 months behind, runs on almost exactly the same clock.
And the IPO pipeline. SpaceX targeting June, OpenAI and Anthropic targeting Q4, but with question marks. Any IPO pricing below the $830 billion private valuation creates cascading write-downs across the exact private capital ecosystem Waxman was describing.
A lot of dominoes is what we're saying.
A lot of dominoes. Arranged very close together.
That's morning signal for Saturday, April 11th. I'm Endu.
I'm Ava.
Go drink your coffee. You earned it.
Or maybe something stronger.
We'll be back Monday. Take care of yourselves.